the Rebel Radio Podcast. It is, man, there's a lot of, man, Hollywood is, everyone's on fucking strike, man.
Yeah, like, man. No one wants to,
Movies are going to get delayed again, maybe. Writers' strike was already delaying things. Now the Screen Actors Guild is going on strike. And what I've gathered from it is I just see a bunch of overgrown men that are filthy rich bitching and complaining. That's what I picked up on it so far. And then they're trying to say, oh, we're fighting for the workers on these films and the small people. That's great and all, but if you're wanting to fight for the small people, maybe not take $28 million and make a movie.
It's like there have been actors before that have said, well, I'm not going to allow this person to make this little. I'm going to donate my salary to it. It's like put your money where your mouth is and do it. You know, there have been actors that come before you or people in the movie business, I guess I'll classify it different, that have, you know, done that. And so it's like anyone, you know, can do that.
And, you know, and being that I work in a job that has a union, you know, I understand it and I understand fighting for the rights of people and their needs. But I also, I don't know, I feel like the Hollywood elite is a way above any of us ever will be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they need to, I think, take a look at themselves in all this and realize like they're making a shit ton of money. Maybe they could do more to help out. And I also think maybe this might sound entitled. I want to word this right, but I feel like they're obligated to provide for the public and they need to be making movies. They need to be writing movies. They need to be writing television shows because it's important to our way of life as far as pop culture and things and its entertainment. And maybe it's not the most important thing in the world. Don't get me wrong, but I do think it plays its part. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this podcast, you know?
Yeah. No, it's like because you're – whenever you go on strike, however, you know, you mean, however your cause is, like the truckers, okay? Right. You have another party in which that you have unintended consequences you probably didn't think about, you know?
Right.
It's like there are people that might not be able to get food because – you know, okay, cool. You know, you're standing up for your rights and all, but you know, hey, you're also affecting this, you know,
your child or something.
Yeah. And it's like here to your point, you know, you're affecting, you know, many of people out there, kids, you know, adults, you have a market that, you know, you're affecting jobs at movie theaters, you know, you're,
right.
You know, and jobs at stations. So you're affecting jobs of the little people as well.
And we just went through all these COVID delays with films and television shows. And now, to me, I know we had a lot of movies last year, but this year really feels like the first year where cinema's back. I mean, I've been to the movies more this year than I've had in the last previous 2 years. You know, I've seen a lot of stuff this year already, and there's some more things coming out I want to go see. And I feel like we're finally getting back to regularity as far as at cinemas and on television and things. And now all of a sudden we've had this writer's strike that has delayed some things like The Boys season 4 and some other things that aren't out yet that should be coming out soon.
Yeah.
And now if this actor strike goes on too long, it could delay more. Like they've already announced delays in Venom 3, Deadpool 3, Mission Impossible 8 have all ceased their filming until this is solved. And then it's in, just like any union, you read one report that says, oh, this will get solved pretty quickly. They're not that far off. But then you read another report from the lead of the actors union and said, oh, we're not solving this tomorrow. We're millions of dollars apart. So, you know, they both have their sides and hopefully a mediator comes in and solves this and they get it settled. You know, it's funny because I mean, I don't remember either growing up and watching the movies and paying attention to the trades and things like that. Cause I've always been a follower of, even before I did the podcast, I've always kept up with movie news and whether it was through magazines back in the old days, to the internet came out. I've always been interested in that and the goings on. I don't ever remember this happening before, you know. I know there's been a few writer strikes over the years, but I don't ever really remember an actor strike that made the news like this. Of course, the news is obviously way more relevant prevalent nowadays because it's everywhere. So maybe there's been some changes in that aspect, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not too sure myself, but. You know, I would be happy if someone came to some kind of an agreement and we were able to get the ball rolling on some of these projects. It's like they're resulting to like small little promos for some of these shows. And, you know, it's, you could tell that, you know, it's missing, you know, the content that it should have.
And they're not allowed to promote their films at all, but yet they can say things on their own social media, but they can't say the name of the film. So like, for example, the kid from Cobra Kai that's in Blue Beetle, he released a statement saying today, I can't go promote my new film, but I can have y'all promote it. So please promote it for me. But he can never say the name of the film. You know, so it's like,
wow. It's weird. Very interesting.
And because they have to stand in solidarity. I mean, the cast of Oppenheimer left at the premiere of the film as when they heard of the strike. And Christopher Nolan supported it. He agreed with it. He didn't have a problem with it. But they all left during the premiere. Of course, the premiere of Barbie was held a couple days earlier. So they got their premiere in before all this happened. Mm. And got to see Margot Robbie walk the red carpet dressed like a classic Barbie doll.
There we go.
Hubba, hubba, hubba.
Hubba, hubba.
you know. Yeah, you know, so hopefully this doesn't carry on too long because, you know, it would suck to have more delays in film after what has already happened. And, but as far as I've read, it shouldn't affect anything that's coming out in the next few months. Like if the film's already in post-production, the films can be finished and released, and studios don't want to delay release dates. So I guess mm-hmm. editors and certain things, post-production work is continuing on a lot of films. It's just films that are like in current, you know, shooting production, things like that.
Okay.
So I don't think it's just like the box office the rest of the year or anything. And, I mean, I almost felt that sneeze through my microphone.
Sorry, man. I even covered my face.
I was like, I think I got splashed. No, I'm just kidding.
It's got splashed.
So, you know, so hopefully this is solved and it doesn't go on too long because it's kind of a bummer, you know, and because I like the movies and I want them to keep on coming.
Did you try and do like an Italian accent? I like the movies.
That's right. And yeah. And I especially like the movie that we went and saw this week. And, you know, we're going to jump into that here in just a minute because, you know, we always tell you guys what we listen to or watch or listen to what we watch this week. And I didn't really watch a lot besides the movie we went to the theaters to go see. So I don't have a ton to talk about as far as what we watched. But if you watched anything on top of what we went to the theaters to see, I mean, you can bring it up.
Yeah. I'm all caught up on the Witcher. I've watched up until when they say part two will come out, which is July 27th. So I have to wait until July 27th for part two of season three to come out. I like it so far. There's like a lot of, you know, double cross stuff going on behind the scenes. So that's always kind of cool. Geralt Henry Cavill is also always good in the role. And definitely, you know, not ready for him to leave the franchise, but I'm going to watch every episode that he's starring in this season to, you know, just remember the good times. Did watch a few more episodes of Babylon 5. I'm up to, I think, episode 19. So I just have a couple more and I can finish the season. It's getting pretty good. It's you know, I'm at that. I just passed this episode where another commander came on the ship and tried to basically take control of Babylon through military protocol and loyalty tests, and it didn't work. I saw this really cool episode with karate in it. It's like I forget what the actual dojo name is called, but he's a human. He's trying to fight in like alien martial arts, and he has to challenge through their customs to get in, and he proves himself. And that was a pretty cool episode. So I'm enjoying it. Having trouble sometimes getting TV time, fighting the kids since they're out of school, but There's definitely
rope and duct tape for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Right. I was able to get rid of them today by blowing up one of the pools that we have and filling it up with water. And they had a great time. I handed them some
play the water. Don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
I knocked out like three or four episodes doing that. And, other than that, I played some Destiny, yeah, got back into it because they brought back Red Banner, which is one of the PvP games you can play. And I didn't do too bad. I wasn't the worst one. I was kind of like mid-pack. I was either like third out of the six of the party or fourth. So not bad. But it was fun. Definitely not anything as high caliber as the movie we saw just a few days ago.
That is true. Yeah, man. So I want to get into this because, so we went to see Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. And, you know, you and I have been to a few movies together the last few years, but it was the first time we'd been to a movie with the old Frank Meister since The Last Jedi. It might have been that long. It feels like there was something we had seen since then, but who knows?
Who knows? Yeah.
But it had been a while. And, you know, and we went and had dinner afterwards, and we realized that we can't take Frank anywhere.
That's true. This is true.
Oh, God. I won't get into the details, but just, Frank, if you're listening, I'm going to create a thing called the Frank filter.
Yes.
And we're going to put it on you. It might look a bit like a dog muzzle, but, you know, that's what it takes.
I thought you were going to say duct tape. Well,
duct tape, too. You know, yeah. We'll feed him his fucking food through a straw.
There you go.
But, yeah, so we went and saw Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, a movie that I had been highly anticipating since last summer when they showed the trailer in front of a Top Gun Maverick. And this movie was supposed to be out in 2020, only a couple years after Fallout. But, of course, as we just talked about, all the COVID delays caused this movie to get pushed back a little bit. Then it was supposed to be out last year, but then Paramount thought, you know, let's split up Maverick and put them a year apart. So we had been waiting for this for a while. Mm-hmm. And it finally came out this week, and we went to see it day one. And it did not disappoint. I'm going to stay pretty spoiler-free with this review because it's – when y'all hear this episode Monday, it's only been in theaters a few days. A lot of people may have not seen it yet. And I think I'm throwing things around, but I'm thinking maybe next June, we might just have a mission month where we finish the last three films we haven't done before the Dead Reckoning Part 2 comes out. It might be something fun to do, but
mission month,
but man, Dead Reckoning Part 1 is, my quick review of it is going to say I don't think it's better than Fallout, but it's just as good as Fallout. They're almost equals. Mm-hmm. Fallout was the best one in the series so far. That was the last one. And this is right there. I there's different things I like about both of them. So I don't think I like either one better. I really think they're on even playing field is how good they are. Now, Dead Reckoning has an extremely intricate plot, but it doesn't insult its audience at all. The plot is never so convoluted that you can't follow what's going on. It just asks you to pay attention. But it's so intriguing and so action-packed and well-shot that it's easy to follow along. Does that make sense? My description might have sounded a little convoluted, but you saw it with me, so I think you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And this movie starts and does not let up. But it also knows when to breathe and know when to have important plot elements. It's not an action film in the vein of like The Raid where it real literally doesn't stop. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning is a smart man's action film where it does give you time to breathe and see what's going on, but also has some incredible action sequence. One of the best car chases in recent memories in any movie. Fantastic stunts and spectacular set pieces is expected to come from these films. And the amazing part is that people are like, might be on the fence. Oh, do I have to commit? Should I wait till part two comes out? Man, part one tells a complete story.
Yeah.
There's definitely more story there, but you'll walk out of part one feeling very satisfied with the ending of the film. And I know I did.
Yeah.
And that's my brief review of it. What are some of your thoughts before we get in a little more of it?
I think you're exactly right. You know, both of us walked away and we said, man, I feel like, you know, we weren't left on a cliffhanger. And that it told a complete story. It's kind of like whenever you see Harry Potter 1 and you know Harry Potter 2 is right afterwards. And it's like it tells you a complete story from the first page to the last page. And you know there's more to the story. You just have to wait until the next movie comes out. It's not like, you know, you're reading the first book and then like you're like five pages from the end and someone rips off the pages. Kind of like Empire Strikes Back.
Okay, you know, compared to the book, that's kind of a rough comparison to the movie, because at the time Warner Brothers made that, they didn't know they were going to make a friend. They were just hoping Harry Potter was successful.
Oh, no, I'm just like, okay. As far as like what the, I'm just right. talking about like from a storytelling aspect, not like, right. hey, you know, this movie is equal to this movie. That's right. no, that's, you know, no, just no. sorry, Potter fans, but no, it's kind of like, you know, you get what I'm trying to say, yeah, you know, yeah. Empire Strikes Back. You're like, holy crap. You know what how can you not tell the rest of the story? You know, what's going to happen? And then in this one, you're like, oh, I got a complete story. This is like reading the first book. And then there is a second book that tells the rest of it. And you know, that's what part two is going to be. So I think they did a good job in that aspect. I think the action is great. The story's great. You know, they've got, like you said, a plot that keeps you engaged, and you just have to pay attention. It's simple. You know, just right. keep your eyes on the screen. Don't wander. Try not to pee too much, and you'll get it.
A plot that could have, in the wrong writers or director's hands, like not a Christopher McQuarrie, a plot that could have been taken a little silly. But
yeah.
It's not silly, because McQuarrie handles it so well with his direction. And the actors, too, and their job selling it to you.
You know. Yeah, I think, you know, if you gave it to a director of, you know, Fast and the Furious, you'd get like a different, you know, different type of action movie. Mm-hmm. And just would be one of those cliche, you know, sci-fi type, you know, plots. But this movie does a good job of keeping it within the realm of Mission Impossible, and definitely keeps it like-minded, like the other films, as far as bad guys and evil plots go. I had Jackie wants to see the movie because, you know, I told her it was great. And she's like, well, how many of these Mission Impossible movies do I have to watch before I see it? And I was like, all of them, dude, all of them. So I had her watch the first three. So next is four. So she's going to have to, you have to maybe listen to our podcast when we did Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. But yeah, man, I can't wait until it comes out next year. I had a lot of fun. And it was super engaging. Even the slower moments were full of information and helped move the chains throughout the movie. And you don't really feel like, you know, there's a boring moment within the film. And it's got plenty of twists and turns throughout the film, and just you know, keeps you engaged with the people, the actors, the characters, and the story. You know, it's a different kind of action film. You know, we were talking about John Wick and how this might be a better action film than John Wick, even though John Wick is purely in the vein of an action film. This is more so in the vein of, you know, kind of like a 007, I guess, type. You've always got this higher power world domination thing going on. And, you know, that's always cool. But, John Wick's different.
But, you know, as much as I enjoyed Daniel Craig's Bonds, I think Mission Impossible as a franchise has replaced it as a modern day spy genre, the best franchise out there. It really has. I mean,
yeah.
You know, because Bond, I mean, they've been all right, but there's been a couple of stinkers in there, you know. I mean, I enjoyed it, but you could argue that Quantum of Solace and Spectre are pretty weak entries in the franchise, you know.
You definitely Quantum, yeah. To get
better and better. And one thing I really liked about Dead Reckoning also is a lot of callbacks to the very first film in 96 of this. I mean, you know, this is no spoiler because it's in the trailer, but Kittredge comes back.
Mm-hmm.
They reveal a certain character is someone's daughter from the first one. Mm-hmm. You know, some big callbacks there. And, you know, and the Dutch angles used by Brian De Palma, the director of the first one, McQuarrie did that on purpose in this one to add intensity to scenes and stuff as a tribute to De Palma and throwbacks to the first one. And so I thought some of that was really cool.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of callbacks to the first film. Some of which, like, I had to rewatch the first film and see if I had noticed them. I didn't notice them. You know, there's a point where there's a flashback and you know, it makes it look like it's from the first film, but I couldn't find it. But it's cool. They still, you know, heavily use that first film. And yeah, man, very, very cool way to pay tribute to De Palma. You know, another thing that I liked about the film is you've got characters from the previous film. And I think that's something the first couple films kind of lacked. I felt like you're changing characters a lot in those first three films. And you don't really get a constant character group until kind of between three and four. You know, three, you lose that chick that played Felicity. So she's gone, you know, and then, but you still have, you know, pretty much everybody constant from, you know, four, five, and six. And then of course in seven, part one. So yeah, I think there's some good scenes with, crap. I always forget Agent Carter's actual name. But, you know, the girl plays Agent Carter and Captain America. She does a good job. And, but yeah, Hayley Atwell, she does a really good job. You know, and her role, and I like how she kind of, joins this, this group of agents that always seem to go rogue. And, you know, this is no exception. They do it in great style. And if you're, you know, on the fence of seeing the film, I think you definitely need to go see the film and check it out. It's worth seeing. It's on par with, you know, Maverick. You know, I think it's one of those films that you'll just walk away and you're like, wow, this is a great performance by Tom Cruise.
Mm. Yeah, Cruise delivers, man. And he talking now, he wants to keep making these movies as long as he can. You know, he wants to keep making Mission Impossible films, and he's enjoying doing it. And just shows you that he, all these years later, is just still enjoying making this franchise and having a good time filming this stuff. And, you know, hey, I'm there for it. If him and Chris McCrory want to make a few more, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I think they could definitely at least make one or two more. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I hope this damn writer's strike doesn't delay part two by too much. Cause, you know, they had taken a break from filming while promoting the film, and they were going to resume filming. And, from what McQuarrie had said in recent interviews, that they only have about a month left of filming. The movie's almost done, and then post-production and have it out by next year. So hopefully this doesn't delay things too much as we get part two. Cause, I'm really interested to see where it goes. You know, I mean, there's, you know, as much as it is a complete film, you start thinking about small plot details that are so there right in front of you that you're really curious as where they're going to go with all this, you know? And that's exciting.
Yeah, no, I think they could go a lot of places with them. I can definitely say that, you know, you don't know who's going to be left in this franchise. I can say that. I truly don't know, you know, who's going to be left at whenever Dead Reckoning is over with, if they're going to be one short or two short, you know, however, you know.
And thinking about that, I've really enjoyed this, you know, this franchise. As much as Mission Impossible is an action series, it does a really good job of developing these characters. Like when you see Benji and Luther on screen and Elsa and stuff, it's like seeing old familiar faces again, you know? And they've done a good job with that, giving them their small moments with their characters and their friendships. I also love the little clips in every movie where they make fun of it being called the Impossible Mission Force, or like, wait, are you serious? Which has become an ongoing on purpose gag throughout the series. Like, yes, yeah, that's what we're called. You know? I think that's really great that they continue to make that gag. And one more comment before we move on to the news is, how badass was Pom? How do you say it? Pom Clintemuth? I don't know how you say her last name, who played Mantis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she was pretty badass in this movie.
That's all. Man, yeah. Whenever I was watching, I was like, man, I know her from somewhere. And that's like, whenever she doesn't have the antenna on her head, she looks a whole lot different.
She kicks some ass.
Dude, whole different kind of role for her. Yeah.
Definitely some credit where credit's due. And there was an interesting story during one of the fight scenes where she told Tom to actually kick her in the stomach to make it real. And Tom's like, I can't do that. And she's like, she basically said she called him a pussy and like, come on, I can handle it. Goes, you want to jump off buildings, do all this other stuff, but you can't kick a girl. And Tom was like, no, I'm not going to kick you. He's like, I can't do that. And he wouldn't give in. He just like, I'm not kicking you.
So, that's funny.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty funny. And, you know, and they had a laugh about it later on, you know, that she was trying to get him to kick him. And she was serious. She wanted him to kick her. And he's just like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Wow. That's funny, man. I didn't realize that happened.
Yeah, but good stuff, man. Only a Mission Impossible movie can make a car chase in a Fiat badass.
For real, man. That was pretty badass, man. That Fiat could move, dude. Yeah, that Fiat had, man. There was something else under that hood.
And I love the fact that in the seriousness of this action franchise, it doesn't take. It's not afraid to have humor in it when it, you know, it's a rescue car that they use to try to get out in this Fiat. And he gets it and she's like, hurry up. He's like, look, they changed the controls of these things. I'm figuring it out.
I'm figuring it out as I go along.
Kind of like in Fallout where he's like, I'm jumping out a window. And bitch, he's like, what if you jump out a window? He's like, give me a moment. So not afraid to have a little humor in these intense action sequences. But all right, man, good stuff. Definitely go see Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning
Part 1
in theaters. Now if I can read my handwriting, we're going to do a little bit of news here. Oh, we got a new trailer this week for Ahsoka. Man, if you're a Star Wars fan and you followed Star Wars Rebels when it was on, this trailer had to be pretty damn satisfying for you because it looks like it looks like Rebels Season 5, basically, and a direct sequel to Rebels, and we got really good looks at Sabine and look at Ezra. We got our first live action look face front of General Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Mm-hmm.
And August 23rd, man, I can't wait. It just looks this. I don't know, man. This might be the most excited I've been for a Star Wars television series. Like, you know, The Mandalorian came out, was excited, but we didn't know what it was. You know, we were like, okay, this new Star Wars looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty excited for Obi-Wan, but this show just has me completely pumped. Like, this is Force Awakens. I'll be honest, it's almost Force Awakens level excitement for me since the last time we got a brand new Star Wars movie for the first time in 12 years when Force Awakens came out. This is that level for me with Ahsoka. I'm super excited for the show.
Yeah, it looks really good. I think the second trailer definitely gets you more pumped. It's longer, it's extended, reveals a few more characters, I believe. I think there's two more characters that it reveals that the first trailer didn't. And, yeah, man, I can't wait. I think it's going to be awesome.
Yep, definitely, for sure. We got an official set photo from Deadpool 3 this week revealing Wolverine in his yellow costume. As a long-time fan of Wolverine, I was hoping for the brown costume because I think – be honest, I think the yellow looks god ugly in live action. It works for comic books and animation, but Hugh Jackman looks ridiculous in that costume. But not, I mean, he looks cool, but I'm just like, I don't know.
I think the brown looks more rugged. And I saw some concept art of him in like the brown costume, and I was like, man, I was like, that's gonna look cool if they pull that off. And this one, it does kind of look a little goofy, but, you know, it is a Deadpool movie. So maybe that's what they're going for.
Maybe they'll pull it off. And then, my only other thing was I noticed a couple of set photos where he's fighting. And they're CGI in the claws again. I was like,
oh, really?
They use practical effect claws for most of the X-Men films. And all of a sudden, they're CGI. I mean, when he's punching, there's no claws. It's like, oh, come on, man. You know, it's like,
man,
I hope it looks good, you know, because, you know, you wonder sometimes because the CGI claws in X-Men Origins were pretty bad. I don't know if they CGI'd them after X-Men 3, if they did for Days of Future Past or any of those, so maybe they did look better. But I know, I'm pretty sure James Mangold used a lot of practical effects for Logan, if I remember reading. So, because he just realized it looks better to have actual claws coming out of his hands.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
I think you're right, man. Yeah, there's CGI on the damn claws.
And, you know, Hugh Jackman, I think, would not have come back for this if he didn't know it was going to be a good, fun movie. So I'm hoping it's good. You know, we'll see. Next year that comes out, right? Yeah.
Yeah, next year.
Assuming it's not delayed. So we got some more cast announcements this week for Superman Legacy. Nathan Fillion is going to play Guy Gardner, you know, who's worked with James Gunn a lot before. We got announcements that Hawk Girl is going to be in this movie, Metamorpho, is that, if I remember right. So this new Superman Legacy film is going to exist in a world in which superheroes already exist and Superman's a part of them. It looks like he's going to have other characters in this movie, which I think is kind of cool, something we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
But I also think it works well towards DC establishing this universe without years of buildup, you know, showing the superheroes are there. I think that's kind of cool. I think it would be cool to have Hawk Girl and these characters in the movie. You know, Nathan Fillion has voiced Green Lantern in several animated projects over the years. And I want to back up a little bit. There's a lot of rumor that Tom Cruise really, you know, everyone knows he wanted to play Iron Man back in the 90s or the 2000s for Paramount. And he's highly interested in playing Hal Jordan. That's why he was given an early screen in The Flash. Apparently, you know, there's a lot of rumors that he's met with James Gunn and that if they, you know, it doesn't mean he's going to be in Superman Legacy or anything, but if there's a spot for him in a project soon that, you know, Tom Cruise would like to play an older Hal Jordan that mentors the, you know, the young Green Lantern. So I think that'd be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
So, you know, I'm still borderline on the fence about James Gunn's DCU, but some of the things that are coming around I like, and I'm hoping that, it continues to work up towards a great things when it finally comes out in 20. I think the other day, I think it was 2 years. We're right about the 2 year mark till it comes out.
Superman Legacy.
Yeah. I think it's July 3rd, 2025 or something like that. So, So we'll see, James Gunn, keep on giving us surprises
in a good way.
Yeah. But that was all the news, man. Just a little bit this week. There were a couple other things that were out there, but I didn't feel they were worth talking about. I was just like, let's do the trailer and the big news. All right, well, let's get into today's featured film, a movie that's 5 years old and a movie that I thoroughly enjoy quite a bit from the great director Steven Spielberg. And it just felt appropriate to follow up our Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny last week, which is a franchise that Spielberg put on the map with a Spielberg film. And a movie that's based on the very popular book from Ernest Cline, who's from right here in Texas. He's from Austin, Texas, and he wrote the book, and then Spielberg adapted the film. And the strange thing is, Spielberg wasn't even going to direct this at first. It was going to be someone else. He was going to produce it. But then Spielberg's schedule came open, and he was able to direct the film, and that is Ready Player One. This is a movie, if you're a pop culture nerd, this movie's for you, man. I mean, that's straight up what it is. It's essentially, in the future, the world's economy is going to crap, you know, based on just oil crises and food crises and all kinds of other things. But there's this multi-million-dollar game company that's built this video game called The Oasis, in which basically people live and breathe and play in The Oasis. That's how they live their lives out to pass the time. And he passes away, and he leaves an Easter egg in his game that whoever finds the Easter egg will be given his fortune and total control of the Oasis. So we have a young man, his avatar is called Parsifal, and him and his friends are on that quest to find the egg. And it leads to one of the greatest adventures ever, as this quest for the egg is taken upon in the Oasis. And you have the evil corporation, the IOI, who are trying to find the egg themselves because they want the Oasis. So it leads to all kinds of battles and fights and cool video game stuff, and just a really nicely packaged hell of a fun film.
Yeah. That's a good way to summarize it. I like, I first saw this film. I want to say I tried to read the book and I read some of it. I know you read all of it. And I think you've read Ready Player Two as well.
I haven't read part two yet. I have it, but I haven't read it.
You haven't read it. Oh, okay. But yeah, I think it's a film that is likes to recognize other films. I think that's an interesting point. So it's like, it made me think, is the film itself interesting, or is it just interesting because it recognizes other interesting things? So it's a fun concept.
Let me slow you down. That Spielberg specifically did not want it to pay tribute to other films. He wanted to be pop culture references, just like the book. That's why he didn't want any of his other films being used in it, because there was supposed to be a Close Encounter sequence he vetoed. I think the only appearance of one of his other films is a dinosaur from Jurassic Park. You know, because he purposely he purposely wanted this to be pop culture tributes like the book was. He didn't want it to be homages. You know, he just wanted fans to watch this and see all the cool stuff in it.
I noticed something whenever I watched it today, though. I was trying to, you have, like, we watch Mission Impossible, right? And you watch Mission Impossible, you're like, man, that's such a Ethan thing to do. You know, he's, even in the first film, he's established. He's going to kind of do his own thing. He's kind of a little bit of a rebel. Wade, I'm not sure if I, if I know him outside of just, he's just a big fan of pop culture. Not that it's not a good movie because of that, but everyone in the movie is obsessed with Holloway, to where it's like, right. I feel like we don't gain a whole lot of perspective into the actual people. Cause they're like, oh, you know, what's cool. You know, like, oh, Buckaroo Banzai, I love it, but we don't know why they love it. That scene with the big booty and the milk, and so, they don't explain. They're just like, oh, it's, Sereno says, it's full of all this stuff, this stuff, but we don't get the explanation why this stuff is so cool. They just, it is cool. They love it. We just don't know, why. There's never that connection drawn. We know why, we know why it is to us. And maybe that's the point. Maybe it's just hey, here's this movie full of a bag of, your fun stuff that you love.
Well, in the book, it is explained. And you're right. The movie doesn't do that as much, but I think the way it's explained in the book, it wouldn't translate to film as much. Like in the book, they explain that everyone is obsessed with Holiday because they have to know who he is so that they can find this Easter egg. And everyone tries to be pop culture experts. Their whole world is centered around being just like him, because in the book, it almost makes him sound almost like a godlike character that people really look up to. Like everyone just really loves him. And the film jumps in immediately him being dead and then looking for the Easter egg. So you don't have that buildup that you have in the book where it's explained as to why people are so obsessed with him.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think there's a few things like that, like his aunt. You only have one scene with her, and then, there's that scene where they make Sereno, think that he's, back in his, haptic chair, and he points a gun at him. He's like, "You killed my mother's sister." And I'm like, that's a weird way of putting your aunt, "You killed my grandpa's daughter." I don't know. It's weird. Right. It's weird dialogue for me there, but I'm like, I feel like we didn't have a whole lot of time in some of these, scenes to like establish certain connections, but I guess because the book is so, it takes a lot of time in the book maybe to kind of establish everything. You probably, obviously you don't have a whole lot of time to do it in a movie unless you want to make a part one and a part two.
Well, like in the book, whenever IOA attacks the little village that Wade lives in, it's much more dramatic in the book. Wade's really sad about it, really upset. They're suffering, and in the movie, it just kind of happens, and it's like then Wade moves on.
Yeah,
I can see little things they change like that in the book.
Yeah, he gets abducted by the bald dude that kind of gives him a little bit of a Blue Steel look right before he kidnaps him. Maybe that's a Zoolander reference. I don't know. And Sereno, I think his character, I feel like is kind of, he's there. He's the antagonist is a businessman. And what's his master plan? I'm going to sell you ads. Yeah.
But Bill Mendelsohn plays
his part good. Yeah.
Yeah, he's so good at it.
He is still good. It's one of those you know, kind of sleazy that's entertaining still. It's not bad sleazy. It's entertaining sleazy.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's funny just, you know, in hindsight, I never thought about this. I'm like, you know, the bad guy's not like this all powerful guy, you know, he's the leader of IOI, and yeah, he does have some pull, but, really, you know, he's a businessman at heart. And, you know, I'm like, that's funny that the bad guy is a businessman and he wants to sell you stuff. And his avatar is a bad businessman. He shows up in a suit. Now his assassin that he hires, that's a badass avatar, the skull for a body. Pretty cool. And I like all the references in it, and it's an entertaining film. It's a great story, great actions, you know, adventure story. And I love all the, you know, you could pause the screen multiple times and be like, oh man, Battletoads. Oh, you know, Halo. Yeah, dude, Jason, yeah. Freddy, Ninja Turtles, you know, so much cool stuff. Minecraft. He's got I didn't realize this. He had a Batman sticker on his goggles. You know, it's
his belt is from the Thundercats.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, you know, so many references, they really, you know, just stuffed this thing like a potato sack, full of pop culture. And it's fun, man. It's a fun film. You know, yeah, you don't get a whole lot of individualness, I feel like, from this film. I think maybe, you know, that's something they just couldn't make happen, because in the scope of the film, you've got to tell the story as a whole from start to finish. And some of the things in the process are kind of overlooked, like the relationships and, you know, just the, you know, developing that personality, I think. But as far as like, you know, seeing a freaking Gundam, and then, you know, seeing the Iron Giant again, even though he says, I'm not a gun, you know, they're like, you're a gun now, bitch. Shoot some lasers at these IOI bastards. Yeah, Mechagodzilla. I mean, that fight is just badass.
Yeah, and I love the Gundam. You know, I thought that was cool. I love, not that Gundam's a deep cut, but it's a deep cut to a casual moviegoer. So I thought stuff like that was cool that it put that in there, you know?
You can turn into anything for 1 minute. That's freaking cool, man. Was that also in the book? Did he turn into a Gundam in the book?
I'm trying to remember. It's been a while since I've read it, if he turned into a Gundam or not. The book had some differences to the ending, though. I do know that.
Yeah. Instead of Twisted Sister, didn't they play something else?
It's been a while since I've read it.
Yeah, I forget. I think the theme song at the end changed. They were supposed to play something else. But, you know, it's minor stuff, really.
Right.
I mean, you know, for the most part, you know, about 85% of it is pretty much there, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like in the book, Simon Pegg's character of Ogden has more to do. And he actually, when they get captured in IOI, Ogden rescues them, you know, because it's actually Ray gets caught in there and Samantha. And Ogden pulls them out and he takes them to his house where he has these rigs, and they set up the whole revolution through Ogden's house. So there's,
gotcha. And
they fight back. So there's some little differences there at the end of the book. You know, and the keys are all different. You know, there's no fancy race. It's more, the keys are a little bit more simplistic in the book. Not quite as action-packed, but you know, you have to make the film more action-packed for the keys. So all that was cool. But yeah, there's a lot of differences. It's been a bit since I've read the book, but the movies is still a really solid adaptation of the book overall. You know, it gets all the base points in it. I think there are some changes. I think in the book, it's not Oklahoma. I think it was a different city he lived in. It was like in Ohio, or maybe in the book it was Oklahoma. The movie's Ohio. I don't remember.
Yeah. It's Ohio in here. And that's how you know it's science fiction, that they ran out of room in Ohio. That's right. That's how you know it's a, and there's no guns in the trailer park. It's like at the right. end, you know, you got a fucking trailer park stacked, you know, quadruple, you know, high, and there's nobody with a friggin' shotgun. Get off my property. Come on, get now.
Right. That's funny. But there's a lot of elements in the book that are in the movie, like Wade's secret thing where he keeps his rig at and stuff away from his stepdad and
yeah,
things like that. So, you know, there are things like that. Artemis and H, all that's the same. Only in the book, they make a bigger deal about H being revealed it's a girl. Like, Wade is shocked when he finds out. Or in the movie, it's just kind of played over.
Yeah.
For laughs. You know, and but I think that's cool. At least they kept it like that. If I remember right, the book also, I want to say Soho. Was that his name, the young boy? I think one of them dies in the book, if I remember correctly. So the book has a little bit higher stakes, you know, but I guess for a film, they didn't want to kill a child, you know, so to speak,
yeah.
because they were young. But I don't want to say that wrong, because it has been a few years since I've read the book, but there's a lot of similarities. I think that's why I appreciate the movie so much, because I had read the book, and I do think that the movie is a really good adaptation overall of it, and it's a hell of a fun adaptation. Every time I watch it, I see new stuff in it. I didn't realize that RoboCop actually appears twice in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not just at the beginning. He appears again later on. Indiana Jones is in there. You know, I mean, there's a couple of Star Wars references in the film. Batman's in the film a couple of times. I mean, one, they're obvious with the Batmobile car and then the Batman scene at the beginning. But Batman's in the final fight, too. But lots of cool stuff like that that you could pick apart all day watching this film and not find all the pop culture references.
Man, yeah, I think you would have to like freeze frame a lot, you know, Planet Doom both times at the beginning and at the end. You'd have to freeze frame it. I like that they saved their one F-bomb for Chucky. That was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. It's fucking Chucky, man.
Like, here, take this. Chucky's wow.
Yeah. The Iron Giant nod to Terminator 2 is cool. I like
little yes.
things like that in it.
Yeah, that was fun.
There's lots of little things like the saying for the orb is from the movie Excalibur, if I remember right.
Yeah, you know, Merlin like says it. Yeah.
Yeah, little details like that in the movie. The guns are all from different, like Artemis uses all kinds of different guns from video games and movies, including the
Aliens.
Marines gun and Aliens.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's really cool too. You could pick apart, like I said, you could do a whole podcast of an hour just picking apart this movie and the pop culture references.
For real.
Because I love the Buckaroo Banzai reference, being a big fan of that movie. You know,
and the Holy Hand Grenade, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah. There is a couple mentions of Buckaroo Banzai in the book, but I thought it was cool they still put that in the movie because I didn't know if they would, you know?
Yeah.
But that was cool.
I think they do the best, identifying and solidifying the character personality of the stepdad. He's a piece of shit. He really, Rick, he's stupid. You know, he's going to bet everything he's got on some artifacts, hoping that he'll win. And he's playing with all their savings. And you're like, man, this guy's an idiot and he's stupid and he's super abusive. And he's all that way until the end. You know, you're like,
right.
Man, they did a really good job of, you know, making you know this guy in just a few minutes.
Yeah. And then he's dead and you're like, oh, well, he's dead.
Yeah, he's dead. Screw him. Sucks for the aunt, but yeah.
You know, this movie also makes me think about there's a lot of people, there's been a lot of talk that the reason virtual reality is not widely marketed is because it can be this addicted. Like, you know, people in the movie are addicted to the Oasis. And, you know, and there's fears from technology people and stuff that people too much, that virtual reality could become addicting. And that's why it's still very expensive to have it in your house, whether it's on your PlayStation, your Xbox, buy an Oculus or something. It's still, you know, obviously, the tech's there. It's not costing anything to make this tech, but yet,
yeah,
they're keeping the prices up because you know people can't get obsessed with it. And I can see how a game like the Oasis, I mean, it could exist, man. It really could, you know, where people, you know, literally lose their shit in the Oasis, like the movie says.
Yeah, dude. And get so upset that they lost that they want to go jump out of a window. I mean, stranger things have happened. There's a you remember Counter-Strike?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize until like a few months ago, there was a guy who lost a match in Counter-Strike like back in like 2004, and he hunted down the guy who knifed him in a game of Counter-Strike and knifed him in real life. Yeah. So it's like there are people that take video games way too seriously.
Yeah, there was a kid in Japan that killed a kid over not trading back some Warcraft weapon at one time.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it happens.
That's crazy.
So you know, so you think about how far we've come with technology, and Ready Player One, as fun of a movie as it is, it's also could be something that could be a reality one day. You know,
we're
living inside a video game in this creative world.
That's why Wade decides to shut it down for 2 days. Wade takes control.
Yep. But I overall, though, man, I love this movie. It's been one of my most favorite fun movies the last few years. You can just sit back, relax, enjoy it, watch it. And I mean, really, that's it. It's just a fun movie. It's one of Steven, maybe it's not Steven Spielberg's best, but it's definitely one of his more entertaining movies, especially for guys like us that grew up with all this pop culture stuff.
Yeah, man. It's definitely, you know, one of those what you call popcorn flicks. You know, it's one of those movies you're going to be entertained from start to finish. It's going to be an entertaining story, and it's going to keep you engaged the whole time.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about a movie that's full of pop culture references, it felt like an appropriate time of the month to do a This Month in Cop. Month in Pop Culture History for the month of July. And how wonderful lead in was that from a pop culture filled film like Ready Player One to This Month in Pop Culture History for the month of July?
Hell yeah, man. It sounds like it was telegraphed.
It may be so. Or maybe so, I just came up with off the top of my head.
Yeah. So this month in pop culture history, 1983, Mario Brothers is released by Nintendo in Japan as an arcade game about an Italian-American plumber. 3 years before I was born.
I didn't realize it was 40 years old.
Yeah, Mario's 40, man.
I guess that made sense. The movie came out this year then for the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
Man, and just to think how far he's come from... Is Mario the biggest video game pop culture character of all time? Probably so.
Man, probably. You could definitely make that case.
I mean, not everyone knows who Seamus is or who Master Chief is.
Yeah.
But our grandmothers know who the Mario Brothers are.
That's true. That's generational.
I think it's got to be. They've got to be the number one. Zelda may be a close second.
Yeah, Zelda close second.
But even then, people don't know that Zelda is the princess. They think it's the elf.
Yeah, they get confused all the time.
So Mario, yeah. I think it's got to be Mario, man. They've got to be the number one pop culture video game characters of all time.
I think Donkey Kong might be in the third. Nintendo may own the top three most recognizable video game characters.
Yeah.
So today, as we're recording, Phoebe Waller-Bridge is celebrating her 38th birthday. You know, we just talked about movie about with her in it the other day.
And then Indiana Harrison Jones' Ford's birthday was the 13th yesterday.
Yeah.
It was yesterday.
Yep. 13th. Yeah, man, he's
81 years old.
81. Speaking about a Zemeckis cube, this month, 1985, Back to the Future, directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring Christopher Lloyd, Michael J. Fox, was released. And, what an impact on pop culture Back to the Future has been.
I've said this before on the podcast, and this is nothing new. I like Back to the Future, but I don't love it. I think it's fun. I appreciate what it did, but I've always thought it's a little overrated. And you know this, people who listen to the show know this. I think it's okay. It's not like one of my favorite 80s movies. It's all right.
I think
if the trilogy had been stronger overall, I would have appreciated more, but then the sequels aren't terrible, but they're just not great.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Back to the Future takes a backseat for me sometimes. It's being good, but not great. That's just my personal opinion.
That's fair.
As I just think if the trilogy had been stronger, I would have had a better love for it.
This month, 1989, the movie Batman set the record to the quickest 100 million, which happened in 10 days. I think we've talked about that before. And it's just,
well, it came out, what, June 23rd of 89. So yeah, 10 days and then around July 3rd or 4th. Massive hit, you know, and, it's a shame that The Flash with Keaton returning as Batman was not the massive hit it should have been because
crazy, man.
Really, is a good movie. And I saw a point to someone's point the other day that said, you know, you boycott these movies because of Ezra Miller, but you're also boycotting everyone else that worked on the film that did nothing wrong that deserved this movie to be seen. And I thought that was a good way to look at it.
You know, yeah.
Maybe put aside your thoughts on one person to go enjoy the movie because it can affect other people. That
man, that's an interesting perspective. Let's say you got 100 people that worked on that movie. Let's just say, let's throw it out there. You're going to not see the movie because 1% you don't agree with.
Right. Yeah. It's a good way to put it. And, but Batman of, changed my life as far as superhero movies. That's for sure. You know,
another Zemeckis reference, 1994, Forrest Gump this month, released starring Tom Hanks, Robin Wright, and Gary Sinise is released. And of course, won Best Picture.
Gary Sinise, you said
Sinise. Yeah, yes, Sinise. I missed the other eye.
Such a classic movie. You know, one of the best modern, I mean, you could argue it's a masterpiece. I mean, you know, Tom Hanks is a fantastic movie. Of course, won an Oscar for it, and the movie won Best Picture. And, you know, just, you know, everyone's seen it. I mean, there's very few people who haven't seen Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
It was a massive hit when it came out in theaters. The book sold millions of copies, and there was even a follow-up book made that never got turned into a movie, mostly because Tom Hanks felt it was silly to do a sequel to such a movie. You know, that's really kind of why it never got done. I mean, you know, Tom Hanks, in fact, I don't even think Tom Hanks did sequels until he did sequels for the Inferno movie, you know, those religious movies.
Okay.
I think those were some of the only sequels he ever did. So, you know, but yeah, Forrest Gump, man, all-time classic.
So 1954, construction of Disneyland commences in Anaheim, California. And then a year later, 1955, same month, July, Disneyland televises its grand opening in Anaheim, California. It only took them 1 year from start to finish.
Yep.
Crazy.
Well, yeah, well, it was much smaller back then.
Yeah.
But yeah. And did Walt die while it was being constructed?
I want to say he died. Yeah, he died before.
I watched the documentary on Disney Plus about it. And I think he died during construction but there were things in place for it to be finished. And,
yeah, he said spare no expense.
Yeah. And the world was forever changed for it. I mean, you look at what they've done now to parks in other countries, parks across, you know, what, there's four or five now. There's two in the U.S., one in Europe, one in Japan.
Yeah.
So at least four that I know of. There might be one somewhere I'm not thinking of. Been a lot of rumors for years about a third one in America, but hasn't happened. You know, living in Texas, there are rumors for years about Disney Texas being built. Never happened. But yeah, you know, man, just it completely changed what theme parks are forever. And
for real.
Wanted it to be a magical place to people come and enjoy. And that's why, you know, there are people at Disney believe that Walt's turning his grave with the prices that they've gotten have kept families from seeing it. And that's why Bob Iger was brought back to maybe start changing things back around.
Yeah, because man,
it's changed in just a few years. 5 years ago, you could go to Disney for, you know, a few thousand. Now it's like they're outpricing people.
Yeah, dude. That's like there was a lady that, yeah, you know, she had like a TikTok that went viral. She spent like $8,000 in like a couple days.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, with just two kids.
That's unbelievable.
Crazy, man. So I did not know about this. 1984, Vanessa Williams was asked to resign as Miss America due to publication of nude photos of her in Penthouse magazine. Did not know that happened.
I'm going to Google that right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, right? Apparently she didn't consent to have them published. I guess, you know, she had them taken and Penthouse got a hold of them and just said, man, we're going to post these. I guess publication laws were different at that time. I guess you know, so. Especially if you signed a release to a photographer somehow, yeah. There's some fine print, you know, and they can kind of sell it to whoever. But and that's what happened.
I bet she got paid behind the scenes something out of that.
She had to get some kind of a royalty.
Yeah. You're going to show my vagina in these pages, you're going to pay me some money.
Yeah. Now I know why Arnold wanted her cast in Eraser and why he did what he did with her. Yeah, I saw her naked in the Time magazine. She's pretty hot. Yeah. In 2018, American director James Gunn fired as Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 director by Disney after offensive tweets resurface, only for him to just come back and show him that, hey, I'm fucking James Gunn and I'm the only one who can make this damn movie for your ass.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about that the other day. You know, he went over to DC and did the Suicide Squad and the Peacemaker show. And then he came back to Marvel and they were like, they kissed his ass. Can you make Guardians 3 for us? But at the end of the day, Marvel still loses because guess where James Gunn is now?
Back at DC, baby.
Running the DC universe. So in a way, is James Gunn giving Marvel a big F you? Like, kind of so in some ways.
Yeah, man.
Like, what's what I'm going to go over here and do? Because as we all know, Marvel's kind of on the downside, taking some hits lately with these recent movies. And James Gunn's over here like, look at me. I'm making a Superman movie. It's going to be badass.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. I think there's something to that fan theory of the you know Rocket story from Guardians 3, where you know Disney is the High Evolutionary, and James Gunn is Rocket, and Disney couldn't figure it out how to make this formula happen for a successful you know movie as far as like you know super successful one, because when Guardians first came out. It's like, whoa, you know, this is a whole different concept, you know, 2014. Right. And, you know, Disney couldn't do that, but James Gunn could do it. And right. And Disney made James Gunn, you know, High Evolutionary made Rocket. And then, you know, had to try and bring him back so he could replicate. So maybe there's something to it.
Yeah.
And lastly, this month, 2018, Mission Impossible Fallout, directed by Christopher McQuarrie, starring Tom Cruise, Henry Cavill, Ving Rhames, Simon Pegg, and Rebecca Ferguson, premieres in Paris.
Yep, and here we were 5 years later with the sequel after COVID delays. And man, Fallout, you know, it was awesome. The helicopter chase is still one of the coolest sequences in film ever.
I think the peak moment for that film might be Cavill doing the. In the you know, the little move that he does in the mirror before he just fucking takes it to that guy Rocky Balboa style and starts slugging him in the gut. I like how he's just like wiry as shit and just beats the shit out of both of them. He beats the shit out of Superman and Ethan Hunt.
Yeah, that's true. but no, definitely, man, that franchise, man, Dead Reckoning was just so good. And so was Fallout.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, yeah,
It's been the most satisfying movie franchise for me. Now I think about it. I mean, over the last several years, these recent films. And I mean, there's been other good movies in there. Don't get me wrong. Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy and other things throughout the years. But Mission Impossible series just keeps delivering.
Yeah, man. And you can't deny that.
And there was a news note I missed. And we'll throw it at the tail end here. But
yeah.
Toho is bringing Godzilla back, and they've got a new called Godzilla Minus One, and they released a little teaser trailer this week. And man, this is not your father's man the suit Godzilla. It looks like Toho is saying, you know what, the Americans are over there making Godzilla movies. We're going to up our game, and it looked intensely terrifying and badass.
Yeah, dude.
Like a fucking horror movie. I was not a fan of Shin Godzilla. I thought it was boring and just like, yeah, the special effects were really bad in most parts of it. But this looks awesome. You know, very cool. And it's going to have an American theatrical release in December. So we'll see. But, that's it, man. Next week's film. We can't forget that. We are going to a movie that was actually shot here in our hometown back in 1990, I believe, around there.
Yeah.
And it's not a great sequel. But every now and then we want to do these movies that are kind of cult classics. But we'll be straight up honest. It's not a good sequel, but it's okay. It's still got Peter Weller doing his thing. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty funny that we had Buckaroo Banzai references in today's episode, and now we're doing a Peter Weller film. And that is RoboCop 2.
About a year ago, we gave this city RoboCop.
Ready for duty, partner?
Nothing I'd rather do.
I think he's worked out pretty well.
Have a seat. This is a bust.
But things have become a little rougher out there.
This unit needs millions of dollars in parts. You see, RoboCop's off warranty.
He's one of mine. And I want him back on his feet.
Oh. I believe that Murphy's case was unusual, but not unique. We can find someone else. Someone to whom the prospect might even be desirable.
And now, we need a law enforcement unit capable of meeting the enemy on his own ground.
She's screaming psychotic, sir.
Well, we aren't planning to build a toy. I'm carrying enough firepower to get the job done.
I got good news for you. You're gonna have a chance for immortality.
With great pleasure, I give you RoboCop 2. Yes. Things will be a lot quieter with this boy around.
That thing is a killer!
Kane! Let's step outside.
You're obsolete!
Take it over, creep.
We've already covered the first one a couple years back. I'm going to die from coffee.
Sorry about that. It's contagious. Contagious through the damn screen.
I know, right? So so RoboCop 2, man, it was filmed here in Houston. And it's kind of a wild ride. A different film than the first one in a lot of ways, cuz you know, different director. And But it's got things to like in it, I think. There's some things to talk about. I think we'll enjoy looking at the things we noticed from our hometown in it when we rewatch it this week. And discuss it next week on the podcast. And
isn't it the same director that directed Empire Strikes Back?
I believe so. I think Irvin Kershner did direct this. Yeah, which is a strange because the interesting thing about Irvin Kershner is he made The Empire Strikes Back, but he never really had a movie that was as good as it.
He directed like the arguably the best sequel of all time.
Yeah. And it just made, and there's been talks about it. We'll talk about that next week, but there's been talks about over the years about how much influence did George have in Empire Strikes Back. Makes you wonder sometimes.
Yeah. Fair point.
Yeah. So that's next week on the show, RoboCop 2. And until then, the rubberradiopodcast.com for all your rubber radio needs. Find us on all those apps out there that are on your little smartphones sitting next to you, or you're listening to us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, all that good stuff. But until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And remember, as always, just go there
and do it.